Welcome. This is CSDC, Can't Stop the Dancing Chicken. My name is Mark Riley, and this will be a periodic podcast. For those of you who don't know me, and maybe many of you are unfamiliar with me, I worked in radio for 40 years in New York City at WLIB, WBLS, and WWRL Radio. I was a contributor to the BBC, a program called Up All Night with Dutton Adebayo and Rod Sharp. And I've enjoyed the medium for a long time, but I haven't been around it for a long time. In 2014, I kind of left radio for a while and haven't been back since. So this is my attempt to get back in the game. I'm going to talk about a few things that are going on in our world, and a few things that bother me that are going on in our world. Episode number one, or I should say issue number one, the not-so-magnificent obsession. Donald Trump and the media. You know, we know that Donald Trump is obsessed with media. He will tweet, he will go on Fox News, he will condemn media who are critical of his policies or of him personally. He is completely immersed in media. And there's a reason for that. And media is completely immersed in him. And there's a reason for that as well. Let's start with the latter first. The bottom line is the media banks on Donald Trump, whether they like him or hate his guts. They bank on him because he is bank. He is money in the bank. Even those media outlets that detest him find that the more they talk about him, the more their ratings go up, and of course, the more money they can charge for their commercials. This is the society in which we live. I am not bad-mouthing that particular fact, but I think in some cases, people really don't know what's going on because they're not being told. You know, the media is very funny about certain things, and I don't want to pick on anybody in particular, but I remember seeing the day of the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree lighting, the anchor from NBC News, standing in the middle of Rockefeller Center, getting ready to introduce actual coverage of the tree lighting without ever saying that Rockefeller Center was at one point, a wholly owned subsidiary of NBC News. But of course, maybe that's changed a little bit. I think there's some other people that now own Rockefeller Center. But be that as it may, the media is not always as forthcoming as it could be or should be about the ties between it and what it covers. Now, I'm not saying that there's any visceral tie or direct tie between Donald Trump and the media. But if you think for an instant that the amount of coverage he gets is because he's that newsworthy, I got a bridge in Brooklyn I would love to sell you. He thrives on coverage. Donald Trump does. This is the president of the United States we're talking about here. This is not some guy off the street. He thrives on media coverage, both positive and negative. The positive feeds his ego. The negative lets him go off. Ask yourself the following question. Why do you think it is that Donald Trump would talk about media outlets like the New York Times and the Washington Post as enemies of the people? He said that. I'm not saying it. He said it. Enemies of the people. And yet, he turns around and does interviews with reporters from those very same publications. If he truly thought that they were enemies of the people, why would he even talk to them? He talks to them because it feeds his ego. And he's got an ego roughly the size of the polar ice cap of the peers. But let's leave that aside for a minute, because there are certain things that he does that do merit coverage when it comes to policy. His god-awful duel over, and I'm not even sure who he's dueling with. I mean, he'll say it's the Democrats, but until January 3rd, the Republicans control the Congress. And yet he could not get $5 billion to continue building this ridiculous border wall, out of a Republican Congress. So what does he do? He allows the government to shut down. He makes all kinds of bizarre threats about closing the border, sealing it off forever, which apparently he might have a wee bit of difficulty doing. The president is a powerful person, but he may not be all that powerful. And at some juncture, at some point, you got to ask yourself, when is this guy going to stop? And the bottom line is, as long as everybody in the media covers every single tweet of Donald Trump's like it's the Sermon on the Mount, he will continue doing precisely what he's doing. He bluffs. You know, remember, and I think some people may have forgotten this, he vowed on the campaign trail that Mexico, for whatever reasons, I still can't quite figure out what benefit he thought it would be to Mexico to have a border wall, but he swore up and down Mexico would pay for it. Now he's saying the American people must pay for it, to the tune of, at least for this section of the wall, or whatever it is he plans on doing, $5 billion. It would be a crying shame if he got a dime out of this Congress. But I have a solution to these government shutdowns, because there have been, I forgot how many there have been on his watch, but there have been a number of government shutdowns recently, of recent vintage, and I'm not a kid. Here's what needs to happen. Not gonna, but here's still what needs to happen. The next time there's a government shutdown, the legislative and executive branches of government should not get paid, nor should they get reimbursed for the time. You want to throw like 800,000 people out of work and tell them, well, we'll pay you later on, including, by the way, the vaunted Border Patrol that Trump says is doing such a wonderful job. They're not getting paid. They'll get paid when the government gets back into operation. Well, I say let the executive branch and the legislative branch, those two branches, let them wait for their money and then not get it. They're the ones that are in charge. They're the ones that would cause a government to shut down. I can't shut the government. But the bottom line is, they shut the government, all of them. Trump, the Congress, everybody. So let them go without pay and without reimbursement until they get the government running again. My guess is they'll probably be able to do that in much shorter order, than what we're seeing now. And, you know, when it comes to this president, and I don't want to talk about him forever. I don't want to talk about him forever because I don't think he's worth it. His lack of basic civility, his lack of basic civilization should be, probably isn't, but should be obvious to everybody who's got a grain of sense in their head. Here's a guy who blames the Democrats, blames the political party for the death of two small children in government custody. Think about that for a minute. Blaming a political party, the Democrats, for the deaths of two children. Without, by the way, ever expressing any regret whatsoever for the fact that they died. Nothing. He doesn't have that in him. That's the problem. The man doesn't have that bone that I assume most human beings have, that bone in their brain or wherever it is, that speaks to compassion, that speaks to empathy, that speaks to things that I think most human beings can find on a regular basis without having to reach too far. He doesn't have it. He simply does not have it. Now, you know, we're looking now at 2 years before there's a new president. 2 years. Or it could be 2 years before it's another 4 years of this guy. we'll get to a little later on what I think needs to happen to stop him from achieving a second term. All political, all legal. I'm not talking about anything extra legal here. Don't get me wrong and don't get it twisted. But if we're not careful, Donald Trump will have a second term. Will have. And I would say to people, if you really want to know what Donald Trump is all about, there are a lot of people in New York City, because this is where he came to prominence. A lot of people know what he's all about. The late Wayne Barrett, who, by the way, they ought to put a statue up somewhere in New York City. One of the finest journalists of the second half of the 20th century, who I had the pleasure of knowing and who had I had the honor of having on my radio show on numerous occasions. He knew all about Donald Trump. He wrote a book about the man. Tom Robbins. These are guys who've been around for a minute and understand the aesthetic, or lack of same, that produced Donald Trump in the first place. Okay? And I am not about to sit here and, you know, go rake him over the coals over this or that or his wife or this. There's a lot of stuff, okay? But I would say to most people, don't bother mocking the guy. Don't bother making a caricature out of the guy, because that takes away from the essential energy that is going to be necessary to beat this guy. He's not going to just like win or lose based on anything that y'all are doing. What you need to be able to do is organize, speak to your neighbors. There's a lot of people in this country, quiet as kept, they don't vote. They do not vote. And Donald Trump managed to get people to turn out and vote in some key states in this country. And that's how he won the presidency, through the Electoral College. Yeah, I know he didn't win the popular vote, but in America, that doesn't matter. What matters is who wins the electoral vote. And if you think that whoever is nominated by the Democratic Party is going to be able to jump up and just say, oh, look at this, no problem, think again. Think again. This is, and maybe it's time, maybe it's the right time to have this take place. This is a fight for the soul of America. Quiet as it's kept, America is getting browner with each passing year. And you see that Trump's border wall and Trump's efforts in keeping people out of the country are aimed primarily at people of color. Whether it be a border wall or whether it be the voter suppression that he tacitly endorses. And of course, the new laws that have been put in place have now, at least in two cases, entrapped Republicans in vote fraud. Alleged vote fraud. Let me be proper about this. Alleged vote fraud. And yet, people still act as though they're a bust. And mind you, this was something that was uttered by people who ought to have known better. Busloads full of illegal immigrants coming into the country to vote. Most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. But people bought it. And there are a lot of people bought Donald Trump. Enough people bought him to make him president of the United States, when some might say he never intended to be president of the United States. But you see, unintended consequences are the order of the day in early 21st century America. And unless people of goodwill are diligent and are willing to do the work to fight not just Donald Trump, but the attitudes that produce Donald Trump and the attitudes that Donald Trump embodies, we're going to be in a really, really big hole. The name of this program is CSDC, Can't Stop the Dancing Chicken. Thank you for tuning into this podcast. My name is Mark Riley. For updates and program notes, like my Facebook page at Mark Riley Media. If you've got an opinion to share, post it on my Facebook page at Mark Riley Media. We're back right after these brief words. podcast. I said, I just want to call it Can't Stop the Dancing Chicken. Those of you who want to know why, ask me some other time. But my wife says, no, no, you can't do that in this digital age. You have to call it something simple. So we call it CSDC. But CSDC stands for Can't Stop the Dancing Chicken. And I'm really glad you're with us. And you can email me, mark at markreillymedia.com. Mark, M-A-R-K, at markreillymedia.com. That's R-I-L-E-Y. Our next segment is going to deal with folk who are near and dear to my heart. Progressives. And I have a message for progressives. Yo, it's time to step up. It's time to put aside petty differences. It's time to stop infighting. It's time to stop worrying about whether or not the progressive message is one that wants to be heard by most of America. And just do it. Craft the message, put it out there, and let the chips fall where they may. The midterm elections should have told progressives one thing loud and clear. Their message resonates at least with a significant portion of the population. So why not step up and go all out? Remember something. Donald Trump doesn't just represent Donald Trump, even though he thinks he does. The bottom line is Donald Trump represents a constituency. It is not the majority of Americans, at least I hope not, but is it a constituency. And he plays to that constituency. So what's wrong with progressives doing the same thing? I am, quite frankly, tired of the incrementalist, gradualist wing of the Democratic. Oh, no, we can't say that. Oh, no, we can't talk about Medicare for all. Oh, no, we can't talk about real immigrants. Why not? Why can't we? I believe the progressives can. But there are certain things that have to happen in order to make that message resonate. Number one, progressives are going to have to start growing organic diversity. Now, most people probably, oh, what is he talking about, organic diversity? I'll tell you what I'm talking about. I'm talking about creating institutions that welcome everybody, not based on, well, we need some blacks over here, and we need some Latinos over here, and we need some Asians over here. Open it up and make it diverse by its definition, not by mandate, not by, oh my God, find me a black. No. Open it up. See, I say this because I belonged and have had some of the best times of my life in organically diverse situations and institutions and organizations. I don't want to get into precisely what those organizations are, but those of you who know me, you know what the organizations are. And it's not just one type of organization. And I must say, I enjoyed interacting with a wide swath of people that were not there because somebody told them they had to be there, but were there because they wanted to be there and they were working for a common purpose. And it is time for progressives to confront the lack of organic diversity in much of what we do. I had somebody who I very much respect, I'm not gonna say their name, but I said to them one time, I said, you know, these different with black people, white people, we're gonna have to come together in order to craft a progressive message that's going to win elections. And you know what he told me? It was a he. You know what he told me? It's not going to happen. And by the way, this is a progressive. This is not some right-wing guy. This ain't Sean Hannity, who I've had conversations with. No, this was a progressive guy. I said, Mark, it's not going to happen. I mean, I wish it would, but it's not going to. Well, until it does, progressives will not be in the position to win elections. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. If you go to some communities in this country, I don't want to say impoverished, but struggling communities, people that live in public housing here in New York City, for example, people that live in the Mississippi Delta and other places across this country, they don't think elections mean jack to them because their situations don't change, regardless of who's sitting in the White House, who's sitting in the State House, who's sitting in the mayoralty. It doesn't matter to them because things don't change. They don't get better for a lot of people. Well, we have to go to those communities as an organically diverse group of people. See, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me anyway. I could be wrong, but it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me to send a bunch of white people into public housing in New York City. It doesn't. You've got to have organically diverse people. People of all races. But you have to have people of all backgrounds and have all those people be of one mind about what needs to change and how the people in these communities can help make that change. See, because quiet as is kept, America, the midterm elections had huge numbers of people voting where in certain communities they weren't voting before. That's how some of the people that got elected, because people saw their own interests embodied in some of these folks. And it's about time that we as progressives recognize what we must do to affect the belief that things can change in these communities. Because, man, I don't know how many times I've talked to people in those communities, friends, acquaintances, and they just say, man, ain't nothing going to change. Man, there's nothing for me going to the ballot box. Why should I? Give me a reason. Now, there are some things that progressives, there's some work that progressives have to do around certain issues. And I'm just articulating a few of them to start with, but we need to have a program for each one of these and a path for each one of these to get accomplished. One, Medicare for all. I am sick, I am tired of people pussyfooting around Medicare for all. I mean, I know that there are certain political realities as currently exist. That I know. You know, you got a guy in the White House ain't thinking about Medicare for all. So that has to be addressed as well. But Medicare for all should be a crucial and important plank of any progressive agenda. Any progressive agenda. Immigration reform. That too needs to be done without building a wall and without losing our humanity in the process. You know, people always talk about American exceptionalism. This guy, talk show host, called him, well, we're exceptional. Well, if we're going to be exceptional, start acting exceptional. And you start acting exceptional by being exceptional. And the kind of xenophobic mania that some people get into when it comes to people migrating to this country, particularly from south of the border, that needs to stop. We need to be able to say we have a program as progressives that will, yes, secure the border without building a wall and will allow people who come here to be put on a path to citizenship that's not going to take them 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Optimally, it should take 6 months for a person, once they're properly vetted, to become a citizen in this country. Education. And this is one, I mean, this drives me crazy. There is no reason whatsoever why an informed public should not say to anybody that purports to represent us, okay, X percentage of children are reading at or above grade level. Let's say 49%. How about we make that 75% in 4 years? You tell us how you're going to do it. See, you have to start saying these are the outcomes that we want. Medicare for all, 6 month path to citizenship once people are properly vetted. A huge increase in the number of young people who are reading at or above grade level, and a huge increase in the number of young people who are taught to think critically. Climate change, the environment. This administration has been abominable when it comes to climate change. Abominable. You know, 3 cold days, climate change don't mean nothing. Global warming, they're all full of crap. We are not going to leave a planet that our grandchildren and great-grandchildren will be able to live in unless we start addressing this. And progressives, and I must give credit, progressives have taken the lead in this. But again, there needs to be more organic diversity in that part of progressive America that speaks to climate change. You know, I've been to climate change marches. Several. The lack of black faces, the lack of faces of color at some of these, kind of makes me think like, whoa, who do they think they're talking to? Foreign policy. We need to make sure that the United States is consistent. And by the way, we have been inconsistent through Democratic administrations and Republican administrations in terms of how we deal with the rest of the world. And the rest of the world understands it. They tolerate it because we are the most powerful nation on earth. We may not be forever if the Chinese have anything to say about it, but right now we're the most powerful nation on earth. So people tend to, I won't say overlook, but they don't jump up and scream about the fact that we are wildly inconsistent. We condemn certain despots and we do business with others because, of course, we have to have their fossil fuel, which gets back to climate change, which gets back to some kind of conservation that will eventually wean us off fossil fuels. The oil industry, notwithstanding. We need to have our current president talked about infrastructure. Did he do anything much about it? The answer is no. No. They said there was money in the pipeline, but no. They haven't done the massive infrastructure upgrades necessary to carry us forward. There are places all over this country where bridges are rotting, highways are pockmarked, and mass transit systems, who have been starved to death for the last 2-3 decades, simply do not function as well as they could or as well as they should. We need to have articulate, clear, plain-spoken positions on each of these issues just to start with. All right, there are other issues, and we're going to have to deal with those too. But just Medicare for all, immigration reform, education, climate change, the environment, infrastructure, and foreign policy, that's a lot to put on your plate, but it's not impossible, and we shouldn't act like it is impossible. Don't be afraid. Donald Trump sure wasn't, that's for sure. Thank you so much for listening. This is CSDC, Can't Stop the Dancing Chicken. We're going to take a very brief break. If you've got a topic you'd like me to cover, email me at mark@markreillymedia.com. Back in a flash. CSDC, Can't Stop the Dancing Chicken. My name is Mark Reilly. Glad you are with us. And we will now turn our attention to sports. We won't necessarily talk about sports all the time, but there is something that needs to be said about the NFL and gross, gross hypocrisy. Isn't it a shame in the NFL? And when I say done good, I don't mean done well. I mean he has done good during his career in the National Football League. He remains out of work. Why? because he kneels during the national anthem. And apparently, that frightens the powers that be in the NFL a hell of a lot more, a hell of a lot more than some NFL players who are the subject of allegations of domestic violence. And, you know, it's almost like you can't tell the players without a scorecard. Now, this is not to tar all NFL players with allegations of domestic violence, because that would be ridiculous and it's untrue. But there is a substantial number of players who are. And what I find fascinating is that these players don't necessarily end up sitting on the sidelines while their cases are resolved. I mean, I know that they, you know, the NFL puts new policies in. Every time they get embarrassed with someone having allegations of domestic violence, or there's video or something that shows an NFL player being violent toward a woman, every time this happens, they institute some new policy that they say is supposed to deal with the issue. And yet, to the amazement of many, the latest domestic violence allegations against a player by the name of Reuben Foster and Kareem Hunt, two different players, it was not the NFL that managed to unearth the information. In one case, it was TMZ, a gossip website that also has a television show, for God's sake. They were faster on the trigger than the NFL was. And yet, Colin Kaepernick remains out of work. Reuben Foster, by the way, wasn't out of work for 15 minutes. He ended up getting picked. He was cut by the San Francisco 49ers when the domestic violence allegations were first made. And before you knew it, he was picked up by the Washington Redskins, where he's getting paid, even though he's not playing and he's not on the roster. And of course, the NFL season is drawing to a close, which means everybody will go bats for the playoffs. But it's lost its luster for me. Ever since Colin Kaepernick took a stand and has paid the price for his stand, the NFL is just, it's lost me. I'm sorry. I mean, I am old enough to remember when everybody and their grandmother wanted Muhammad Ali locked up forever and ever because he refused to go into the armed forces of the United States. Said his religious beliefs precluded his going. And I remember when there were a group of athletes and entertainers, including Harry Belafonte, Jim Brown, Bill Russell, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who held a press conference and said, you know what? We stand with Muhammad Ali. Who's standing with Colin Kaepernick? Eric Reed is standing with Colin Kaepernick. And for his trouble, he has been drug tested I don't know how many times in terms of what is supposed to be a random testing system. And I don't want to misspeak about how many times it's been, but it's been in the recent past, and it's been in my judgment, it's just my opinion, because he has stood with Colin Kaepernick and said, you know, like, you know, the NFL gave the Players Association some money and said, hey, you know, we can do this and that and the other, and we can speak to not domestic violence. They would never do that. But we can speak to the issues of brutality and inequality and that sort of thing. And that was supposed to paper over the fact that they kept Colin Kaepernick out of work. Now, he's suing. He is alleging collusion. I hope to God he wins. Because how in the world can you keep Colin Kaepernick out of your league when the Oakland Raiders, up until now my favorite team for a very long time, just signed a guy, a quarterback, same as Kaepernick, same position, hired a guy named Nathan Peterman. Nathan Peterman is famous for one thing. He threw 5 interceptions once in a single half. I think it was last year sometime. I mean, this guy is just he's ridiculous. This year, his numbers include one touchdown and seven interceptions. And yet, when he was cut by the Buffalo Bills, guess what? The Raiders hired him. Apparently, because John Gruden loves him. Of course, I don't know what color the sky is in John Gruden's world, given what the team did this year, but be that as it may, you bring in a guy whose completion percentage is just above 50%, one touchdown, seven interceptions, famous for throwing five, not in a whole game, in one half of a game. And there's supposed to be some logic in signing him and not signing Colin Kaepernick. I just find that beyond unconscionable. And I mean, my allegiance to the Raiders may stop anywhere because I know a little bit about the backstory that has them moving from Oakland to Las Vegas and who talked them into it and the politics of the person that talked them into it. So I don't know if I can really support them. I, generally speaking, support what the rest of the world calls football, which we call soccer. I kind of follow that with bated breath every week. Some weeks it's good for my team. Some weeks it's not so good for my team. But the bottom line is, how do you show such gross hypocrisy? And see, to any question, and I heard a discussion about this, a caller on one of the sports talk stations here in New York. A caller brought up this hypocrisy. And one of the hosts said, well, I don't want to deal with that. I don't want to talk about that. What kind of punk move was that? There is hypocrisy. It ought to be called out by the sports talk gods who were too busy dealing with fantasy football, which I have abso-freaking-lutely no use for. But that's where they spend their time. That's where they spend their energy. And a lot of it has to do with money. All right? After Kaepernick took his stand, television ratings and NFL numbers went down. They blamed it on Colin Kaepernick without any hard evidence, as far as I know, but they blamed him. And then this year, with Kaepernick out of sight, out of mind, apparently, the numbers have started to go back up. The numbers of people who are kneeling during the national anthem has also dwindled down, apparently, to very few, if any. Maybe Eric Reed may be the only one left. And you see, this is hypocrisy. Five interceptions in one half. Got a job. Colin Kaepernick went to the Super Bowl. Got no job. That's absurd. And they know it's absurd. But they're hoping that the numbers go up, the revenue goes up, everybody's happy. All of the owners are happy. Television networks are happy. The advertisers are happy. Everybody's happy. But boy, will they be unhappy if and when Colin Kaepernick is able to win a court case that says the NFL has engaged in collusion against him. And if it was me, the first person I would call is Mark Davis, the owner of the Oakland Raiders, and say, what are you doing hiring this guy and you can't hire Colin Kaepernick? And you're saying there's no collusion in that? Oh, well, he doesn't fit our offense. Get out of my face. Nonsense. Utter and complete nonsense. Anyway, enough about sports. Got a little bit of time left. I want to talk about Brexit because I've been kind of following Brexit fairly closely. I was in England for a while. And there's something that kind of rings a familiar bell about what the British people are going through with Brexit. And for those of you who don't know, they don't have a plan that's been able to be approved by Parliament to get out of the European Union. They have until March 29th to come up with something, or they will be out with nothing. They will be out, poof, which I'm not sure is what the British people initially wanted when they voted by a fairly narrow margin. to support the idea of leaving the European Union. I believe the numbers were 52% for and 48% against. Here's the problem. Here's the crux of the matter. The British people, like many Americans, should have demanded before the referendum that eventually said, yeah, well, we're going to leave. Before that, they should have demanded a plan. Those people who supported Brexit should have been duty-bound to go to the British people and say, okay, this is how we're going to do this. If we win, this is how we're going to make all the trade deals we need to make. This is how we're going to deal with people, free movement of people between England and the European Union. They should have had all that covered. The fact that they can't come up with an agreement now is indicative of the fact they didn't do their homework. They didn't take care of business. They didn't do what they needed to do. And they didn't because the public didn't make them. That's the same thing here. We have created a political class that is seemingly clueless about how the average American lives, about how the average American has to go from paycheck to paycheck. And that bugs me about this whole government shutdown thing. But that's another discussion for another podcast. The bottom line is the British people didn't demand enough and Americans aren't demanding enough. I don't know what other countries in the world. I know one thing. I know the French demanded something. The French said, no, you're not going to increase taxes and do all these different things. And they got out in the street. And you know what happened? Their government had to back the heck up. Okay. There's a point at which people have to stand up and say, we want better from you in terms of their politicians, the political class. And if we don't get it, you can go sell insurance someplace. Not to knock insurance, but you know, you can go someplace else and do whatever foolishness you want, because we're not going to tolerate you sitting in office making stupid money and not in any way, shape, or form being accountable to us that enabled this for you. And it's true with Brexit. And it's true. I mean, I'm not sure how I feel. There's been some talk about having another referendum. I don't know how I feel about that. What happens if the result is different? What is it, best two out of three or something? I mean, I personally think they never should have voted to leave. That's me. I don't live there. But the bottom line is, they didn't demand accountability, which is why they are in the mess. And I do emphasize the term mess that we're in. They're in, excuse me, not us. We're in a different kind of mess here in the United States. Didn't get a chance to cover everything, but I do want to say, first of all, thank you for tuning into this podcast. For updates and program notes, like my Facebook page at Mark Riley Media. You can email me at mark@markrileymedia.com if you got a topic you want me to cover. And finally, what actions are you taking for the 2020 elections? Email me at mark@markrileymedia.com. That's mark@markrileymedia.com. Thank you all so much for listening and indulging me in this podcast, and hope to talk to you again in the future.
In the future, everyone will have the same haircut and the same clothes. In the future, everyone will be very fat from the starchy diet. In the future, everyone will be very thin from not having enough to eat. In the future, it will be next to impossible to tell girls from boys.